Hey guys, welcome to the Fellowship Greenville Students Podcast. This week, Matt Dinsky continues our series, Splinters of Doubt, and talks about conditional faith and disappointments when Jesus isn't who we expected. Matt challenges us to think about if our faith depends on our conditions we've placed on Jesus. We look at Luke 24, verses 13 through 35, when the two men are on the road to Emmaus and have a conditional faith for who they thought Jesus should have been. They were sad and disappointed, and Matt reminds us that we will never truly see Jesus if we're only looking through the lens of our conditions for him. We hope you enjoy this message.
And welcome, welcome, welcome to Fellowship Greenville students. My name is Matt Dinsky. I'm the student ministry pastor here, and it is so good to be with you guys here tonight on Sunday night, very wet Sunday night, but it is good to be with you nonetheless. Two things: you are loved here and you belong here. We firmly believe that. We believe that that's how God feels about you as well. And we celebrate that you're here. I'm thankful to be here with you guys tonight. You guys doing well? Doing okay tonight, even though it's rainy and wet? Good, good, good. Man, I love it. Over the past few weeks, we have been in this series right here called Splinters of Doubt. And the idea is like, man, if you get a splinter in your hand or your body, you know what to do with it. Like, you get a needle, you get some tweezers, and you dig it out. Fairly simple, right? But what do you do when you get a splinter in your mind? Like a question or a thought that just comes along, maybe you didn't expect it, just comes along, and it gets inserted in your mind, and now all of a sudden you have this, like, this thought in there, and you don't know what to do with it, and it just sits, and it begins to fester, and everything around it becomes a little more irritable, and becomes sensitive, and it just leads you to start asking more and more questions, and eventually leads you to start doubting. How do we deal with splinters in our mind? And I've said it every week, and I just want to clarify tonight too. I don't think doubts are bad. I don't think doubts are wrong. If you don't wrestle with some things in your faith, then you probably need to get into this book a little bit more, because there's some stuff in the Bible that, man, like, whoa, what did he mean by that? What is Jesus teaching here? Like, how do I reconcile that? I don't think doubts are bad or wrong. I think when we allow our doubts to become dead ends, that's when it becomes dangerous. So allowing those things just to stop us in the process of trying to navigate it and figure it out. But doubting can actually be a tremendous faith strengthener, as it leads us through, and the flames of doubt temper our faith and make it even stronger. So splinters of doubt. We've talked through a few things. We've talked through personal pain when you go through something hard and experience loss or experience pain, how that can affect your perspective of God and his goodness. We've talked through self-doubting when you just like begin to question who you are and your place in this world and your purpose. And in one season of life that seems so confident, but now you're like, man, who am I? Is God still good? Do I even believe that anymore? What's my purpose? We're going to talk through the problem of evil. How can a good and loving God be true when evil just runs rampant in this world? How do you reconcile those two realities? We're going to talk through the current of culture. Like, we, you know, there's this raging river. The world and the culture is just moving so quickly, and we're just like, ah, you know, some of it's pretty fun. I'll just put my toes in. I'll just wade in a little bit. And the next thing we know, we're swept away and just kind of grabbing at everything the world has to offer us and forgetting all about Jesus. These are splinters of doubts. These things can just fester in our minds. What do we do with them? This week, I want to talk about another splinter of doubt, and I want to look at the splinter of conditional faith. The idea that, like, you believed in Jesus at some point in your life, and maybe you didn't even realize it. It was like a subconscious thing, or maybe conscious thing, but you brought in conditions with your faith. It's like, all right, Jesus, I'm going to believe in you. I love you. I trust you. You're awesome. But as long as you fit these conditions or these parameters, if you operate in this way, I will believe in you. And when he stops operating in those ways, or when he doesn't do what you thought he would do, when you've put all your eggs in some baskets and it just didn't work out for you, when those conditions are present, all of a sudden those can become a splinter. When you had a conditional faith, maybe you didn't even realize it. So some of that has to do with being disappointed in life, being disappointed in Jesus. Anybody ever been disappointed in life before over anything? You forgot it was Sunday and you drove to Chick-fil-A for dinner, you know what I mean? Like, it happens. Ah, it hurts. Yeah, disappointment. I'd like to share a story of disappointment in my life. I don't know if you guys are interested in it or not.
Yeah.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. It's a love story. JC, I don't know if you guys are interested or not. You guys probably, I could skip this part of the sermon. We just go. All right, calm down. All right. There was a season in my life when I was in love. It was. Yeah. Yeah. And I experienced disappointment. I was in seventh grade. What are you laughing at? What are you laughing at? What's the joke? Don't act like you guys weren't. Don't even pretend like middle school you guys were like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna marry that guy. Like, don't even front. I know that was you guys too. You wanna know why I know that? Because puppy love is real to a puppy. And when you're in seventh grade and you see the girl, you're like, dang! Don't pretend. I was in seventh grade. I went to a friend. Sheesh. I went to a friend's birthday party. And she walked in. Yeah. You guys feeling it? You guys know what I mean. Already, she had the drip. You know what I'm saying? Like, woo! Gosh. She walked in. Guys, she was in eighth grade. Yeah. 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 1 year older. And man, I was like, I didn't know God made girls like that. Like, I was like swept off my feet, man. And I was just like a puddle. I mean, I was like, she came in, I was like, hey. Woo! And so we became friends that year. We became good friends. But at the end of the year, there was a problem. She went to high school. Your boy is in eighth grade. it doesn't work. But somehow, we stayed friends. We stayed close. Yeah. Ooh, juicy. We talked on the phone. I'm just saying. This is before smartphones. This is before cell phones. Like, I'm talking landline. With a cord. Like, I got a limited range that I can walk. You know what I'm saying? Like, we talked on the phone. We stayed close. I lost a little bit of hope. I was like, man, I'm in eighth grade. She's in ninth grade. But we stayed close. And then all of a sudden, end of the year, your boy's in high school now. Your boy's in ninth grade. Yeah. And I'm rolling through those hallways, too. I'm like, yo, girl. Like, ha. Our friendship grew. Thank you. Yes. It's like our friendship grew. Guys, I didn't realize what was happening. Right under my nose, it was happening. I didn't realize it. I didn't realize that I was slowly becoming the founder, CEO, and president. Mm-hmm. Anytime, like, she would date, you know, a boy and they would have, like, problems, guess who she called? Me. Yeah, I've been there too. And of course it's like, but I'm head over heels for you, so of course. I'm like, oh man, tell me all about it. You got like 3 hours? Let's talk. Like, of course. Because I'm somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm hoping maybe this time, just once you realize it's you I'm supposed to be with, not these chumps. Never worked. Never worked out. So this crush just grew, man. Like, we became best friends. Like, I'd be over at her house, she'd be over at my house. Like, I became friends with her parents. Like, we just got close, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got close. We would go on, like, friend dates. Yeah. Like, get dressed up and everything, too. Like, I'm paying for the night and you smell good type stuff. You know what I'm saying? I know. And my little heart, my little high school heart at the time was just so full of hope. One night, I had a buddy spending the night. A friend of mine. Good friend, best friend. And you know how guys can be, you know, you get your boy comes over, he just hypes you up, and all of a sudden you start thinking crazy thoughts. We were on something back in the day called AOL Instant Messenger. Yup. Where you dial up your internet, and it actually overrides the phone line in your house so no one can call your house. And now you're on the internet, and you open up something called AOL Instant Messenger. This is like old school texting. And this little box comes up, and here's your friends who are currently online. I saw her name. Click. Hey, what's up, girl? No, like, I wasn't that smooth. I was like, hi, period.
Hi.
My friend sitting behind me, he's my hype man. He's like, yo, dude, you should tell her how you feel. I'm like, nah, man, nah, dude, like, chill, calm down. He's like, nah. So we're just talking, But my dude keeps hyping me up. You guys know how it goes. He's like, come on, man, come on. Like, come on, this is the time, dude. Y'all been friends since you've been in seventh grade. I'm like end of my 10th grade year now, so going on over 4 years. I know, guys. I didn't have a me in my life at that time to help me see. My friends hyped me up. He's like, come on, dude, it's for you. Come on, this is your chance. I'm like, I mean, all of a sudden he started making some sense, you know? I'm like, maybe it is my time. I started typing in the box. I'm like, yo, girl, like, you, I'm not gonna tell you what to say. I don't even know what I said. I know that I, like, laid it out. I was like, hey, we've been friends for a while. I like you. I wanna be more than friends. I wanna be boyfriend and girlfriend. Yo, like, I'm typing it. I'm so nervous. Like, my palms are sweaty, you know? Like, I'm typing it in, and I'm like, whew. I'm like proofreading it on the, you know it's important when you proofread. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like proofreading, like, ugh, grammatical error. And like correcting all this stuff. My boy said to me, yeah, dude, you know, give me the shoulder up. Like, yeah, get it. Come on, Romeo. She ain't gonna be able to resist this electronic inquiry of love. I get it all typed up on the screen. I'm reading it. And then I start to get cold feet, man. I'm like, ooh, I don't know, man. It's a big risk. Like, I've put in four, I planted, you know, some seeds. I don't know if it's time to make the move yet. You know, where the friends, and it just messes up your head, the friend zone. You just don't know if you'll ever get in. And I'm like, I'm like second guessing. I'm turning around, I'm like, dude, I just don't know. I like this pause. As I'm deliberating what to do, I see my friend's arm reach right around my side. It's like it happened in slow-mo. It's like I was frozen. I saw it all happening. Finger goes over the enter button. I'm like, no, please stop. But I couldn't move my mouth. I'm like, nothing's coming out. Enter. Message. Ding, like, up to her. And I'm like, what? But what'd she say, though? And I see her, like, the little... we have three dots. We've got the ellipsis now when they text you back. It used to be a pencil. This little pencil came up. I was like, ooh, she's writing back. This is what she said.
It was short and sweet.
She said, Matt. Oof, first name. First name, baby. Matt. That's kind of tough. Matt, I just think of you too much as a... brother. Brother. I didn't get friend zoned. I got brother zoned. And I was crushed. I mean, I was crushed. Girls, they teach this. They teach when you're born as a young woman, and I just had a little girl 4 months ago, and the doctor gave it to me, but they give you a manual. Like, hey, here's how to friend a dude and lead him on and then crush his soul. I didn't realize they gave that to girls, but they did. I was crushed, man. I was, like, dude, I know it's silly. Like, I know it's silly. Like, looking back on it, I'm like, wow, what a ding-dong I was, man. Like, are you kidding me? But you guys know, some of you are going through this, or you've been through this, and you know, man, like, you like who you like, and when you put all your eggs in that basket and it doesn't work out, you are crushed. And I remember I had to go to school the next day. Yeah, I did. We didn't have COVID. I had to go to school the next day and look at her and pretend like I wasn't devastated. You know, like, so girl, like try to put it on. And I was crushed. I was disappointed. And at that time, I didn't know Jesus. I didn't believe in Jesus. But I remember praying over those 4 years of liking this girl. I remember praying to God. I know it sounds silly, but like, God, I, like, would you let us be together? Don't pretend like you guys haven't prayed. You guys are like, wow, what a freak. But you know, you guys have been in your room. God, please let him see me today. Like, you know. I was crushed. I was crushed. And I remember thinking, like, I don't understand this. Like, I'm so confused. Like, the past 4 years, we were like best friends. I'm sincerely and truly disappointed. And I remember thinking, like, not that I didn't believe in Jesus, but I remember thinking, like, God, why didn't it work? Why wouldn't you answer that prayer? It affected, like, how I thought about God, which seems weird now, but in that moment, when it was real and when it was heavy, it did. It affected it. And sometimes we can have these ideas or conditions placed around God, and if he doesn't come through in the way that we want, we begin to, like, scratch our heads or question him or think through, man, like, what? Come on, what are you doing? This was supposed to work, and it didn't. I was disappointed. And so it begs the question, it invites this question when we do this in our faith, does my faith in Jesus depend on my conditions for Jesus? Does my faith in Jesus depend on my conditions for Jesus? And some of you maybe have never even asked this question before. And I hope and I pray that none of us do have conditional faith, but more than likely some of us do. And more than likely we don't even realize that we do. We have these things in our minds, in the structure of our belief system, and we're expecting Jesus to act like this, do this, answer this prayer. By the time I'm this age, this will happen and that should work out, and he will heal this and he will restore that. We have all these things in our minds, and when they don't work, we start to get angry or frustrated or question Jesus. Does my faith in Jesus depend on my conditions for Jesus? I want to look at a story tonight, Luke 24. Jesus has been murdered. He was crucified 3 days prior to this. And he was just resurrected. He defeated death. The tomb is empty. His disciples are starting to, they know the tomb is empty. They don't really know where Jesus is, but they're starting to question, like, where does body go? Where is Jesus? And this story is about two disciples who are walking from Jerusalem to a different town named Emmaus. It's about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And these are not two of the like main story front disciples. These are like B-list disciples. One of them doesn't even get a name in this passage. The other one's name is Cleopas. So sorry about that, buddy. So these are like B-level disciples, but they've been following Jesus. They're not the ones in the, you know, in all the stories that you hear about Peter, James, and John. Like, they're not the main ones. They're just kind of in the back, but they've been walking with Jesus. They've been following Jesus. They've believed in him, and they have a lot of hopes and conditions around who Jesus was supposed to be. So, Luke 24, verse 13. That very day, two of them were going to a village named Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking with one another about all these things that had happened. What things are they talking about? The crucifixion of Jesus, the murder of Jesus, their hopes in who he was supposed to be are now ravaged and let down, and the empty tomb. They can't make sense of this empty tomb. They're talking about all these things that had happened. And while they were talking and discussing together, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. So they're walking on the road, and Jesus just kind of like fades into the conversation, starts walking with them, starts asking them some questions. Verse 16, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. Now, this is really interesting because after Jesus was raised from the dead, when the disciples first began to see him, they did not recognize him. And there's a lot of mystery here and a lot of like, why, what ifs, could it be? But these guys are shoulder to shoulder on this road with this guy, with this man, and they don't know that it's Jesus. They're unaware that it's Jesus. Their eyes were kept from recognizing Jesus. And Jesus said to them, what's this conversation that you're having? What's this conversation that you're having with each other as you walk? And this question actually stopped them in their tracks, literally. They're walking on the road. Jesus draws near. We don't know where they're at and what mile of the seven they're walking, but they're walking. This guy comes up. They don't recognize him. He's like, hey, I overheard you guys. What are you guys talking about as you're walking? And this question literally stops them in their tracks. They stop. Scriptures say, they stood still, looking sad. This question prompted them to stop, looking sad, disappointed, let down. And then one of them, named Cleopas, answered him, are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know about the things that have happened there in these days? I mean, this guy's like, man, what are you? Remember, right now, like, Jerusalem is having the Passover festival. Passover was like the holiday for Israel, and Jerusalem was the epicenter of this holiday. And the city would swell in population, sometimes 4 times as large as it normally is. This is like New York Times Square on New Year's Eve. People just like flood the thing, pack it out. It is jam-packed. And so the news of the murder of this rabbi, Jesus, who was buried and is now no longer in his tomb, it is spreading like wildfire. Everybody knows what's going on. Everybody's heard about it. And this one guy that they don't recognize comes on the road. He's like, hey, what are you guys talking about? And it stops them in their tracks. They're looking sad. And they look at him, man, are you the only one who doesn't know about these things? Haven't you picked up the paper? Haven't you turned on your news app? Haven't you opened Instagram? Don't you check your Twitter, bro? Like, are you the only one who doesn't know what's happening? And Jesus says to them, he keeps inviting the conversation. Like, they're upset about the fact that he's dead. And he's like, oh, tell me more. Like, he's inviting this conversation. He says, what things? And they said to him, concerning Jesus of Nazareth, a man who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to be condemned to death and crucified him. That's what we're talking about. Are you the only one who hasn't heard about that? That this Jesus of Nazareth, this prophet, mighty in word and deed. He was doing all sorts of things for the past 3 years in our country. And the religious leaders just handed him over to Rome to be murdered on a cross. That's what we're talking about. Look at verse 21. This is like the key verse of their emotions. They looked at Jesus, not knowing it was Jesus, and they said, "But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel." We had hoped he was the one to redeem Israel. Now here's what they mean. If you were a Jewish person in this day and in this culture, and you've been steeped in Old Testament literature, the Old Testament is packed with prophecy after prophecy after prophecy about God's chosen one, otherwise known as the Messiah, the chosen one. And the common understanding of Messiah based on the Old Testament was, one day Messiah will come. And when he comes, he will overthrow our oppressors. The oppressors of that time was the empire of Rome, Caesar. Rome has spread all throughout the land and has conquered and taken over, and Rome had conquered Israel. And people began to understand the prophecies about Messiah, the chosen one of God. When he comes, he will lead a military revolution. He will overthrow Rome. He will reinstate Israel as a nation, and he will sit on the literal throne in the temple of God. He will rule us. When they look at Jesus on the road and they say, "We had hoped he was the one to redeem Israel," what they're saying is, "We thought he was Messiah. We got our hopes up. He gave us all the signs. He fulfilled prophecy after prophecy. You should have heard him teach. He taught with authority. And all the miracles he could do. He spoke to weather. He had dominion over the darkness. He could cast out demons from people. He put the religious leaders in their place. Man, he didn't submit to anybody. Man, this guy was it. He healed people. He made them right. He made blind people see and deaf people hear. Crippled people could walk. This guy was it. We thought he was going to be the one to redeem Israel. We thought he was going to overthrow Rome. We were in the wing waiting on him to give us that look. Today is the day, boys. Let's lead a military revolution. And now he's dead. Yes, and besides all of this, it's now the third day since these things happened, since his death. Jewish belief, when you died, you were dead, but your soul kind of hovered for about 3 days. And after 3 days, you're like gone, gone. Like it's beyond hope at this point in their minds. They had a conditional faith for who Jesus was supposed to be. When Messiah comes, he will lead a revolution and overthrow Rome. And they're basing this on Old Testament scripture. The dominion that Messiah was overthrowing was a spiritual dominion, the dominion of darkness. The oppressors that Messiah was overthrowing were spiritual oppressors. The redeeming of Israel, the sitting upon his throne is not this earthly throne, it's a heavenly throne, as Jesus would ascend back into heaven. But they interpreted it all based on their conditions that they wanted. And they started to see Jesus through the lens or the filter of their assumptions about who he was supposed to be. They had a conditional faith. And now that Jesus is dead, they are sad. They are disappointed. They have given the last 3 years of their life. They have put all the eggs in the basket of Jesus. And now he's dead, and our hope is dead with him. We thought he was the one. Their assumptions about who Jesus was supposed to be had made them blind to who he really was. Even as they're standing right next to him, talking to him, they can't see him. because they're still waiting and looking for who they thought he would be. If their assumptions made them blind to who Jesus was, do ours. Do your conditions and assumptions about who Jesus is and what he's supposed to be doing in your life and how he's supposed to be answering your prayers and how he's supposed to be working all this out and how he's supposed to be giving you your childhood crush and all that stuff. Do those assumptions and conditions that you're setting up actually make you blind to who Jesus is? Because they were standing right next to him and couldn't tell it was him. We thought he was the one. Moreover, some of our women of our company amazed us. They went to the tomb this morning and they didn't even find his body. They came back saying they had even seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. Look at what Jesus says to them. Verse 25. Oh, foolish ones. Oh, foolish ones. And slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary that the Messiah, that the Christ, should suffer these things and enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses, so Jesus turns all the way back to Exodus, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he goes through the entire Old Testament, he interpreted to them all the scriptures concerning himself. They had a misunderstanding of Old Testament scriptures. And Jesus is like, guys, you foolish ones, slow of heart to believe. Wasn't it necessary that the Messiah should suffer? You're waiting on conquering king. You're defining Messiah based out of Daniel chapter 7 only. What about Isaiah and the lamb being led to the slaughter? Look at that prophecy about Messiah. Wasn't it necessary that the Messiah should suffer? And he has an Old Testament Bible study with them during this 7-mile walk. Verse 28, so they drew near to the village where they were going. Jesus acted as if he were going further, but they urged him strongly, saying, hey, stay with us. You know, it's evening, days spent. Guys are not good at inviting other guys to sleep over. Girls are the bomb at it. Girls are like, oh my gosh, we should have slumber parties. Guys are like, oh man, you're leaving? I mean, that's cool. Like, you know, like you could stay or whatever. Like, I don't even care. I got an Xbox if you want to stay. We could like share my bed, or I can sleep on the floor, or you can sleep on my bed. Like, I don't, like, guys are not good at the slumber party invite. These guys are like, they drew near to the village where they're going. Jesus acted as if he's going further, and they urged him strongly, saying, stay with us. I mean, it's evening. It's dark. Scary when it's dark. The day is spent. Come on, I mean, you know, we got hummus in here. Like, just stay with us, bro. So he went in to stay with them. He's having a meal with them, verse 30. When he was at the table with them, he took the bread, and he blessed it, and he broke it, and he gave it to them. Verse 31, and their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. It was in that moment, boom, oh, it's you, it's you. They knew who they were sitting with. The breaking of the bread and the blessing it, what does that remind you of? Last Supper, right? John chapter 13, the night of Jesus' betrayal, arrest, leading to his crucifixion. Jesus is with his disciples and he holds up a piece of bread and he says, this bread represents my body, and he rips it in half, and it will be broken for you. The disciples with Jesus in this room are waiting on conquering king. They are waiting on Messiah to overthrow Rome. They are waiting on conquering king. They had no category in their mind whatsoever for suffering servant. Jesus, wanting to reveal who he really is to them, doesn't exercise power and authority. He doesn't go to some Roman guard and like overthrow him and look back. He's in the home with them. He picks up a piece of bread, he blesses it, and he breaks it in front of them. They were waiting on conquering king, and he reminded them of broken body. And it's in that moment, it's you. And in that moment, he vanished from their sight. They looked at each other and they said, didn't our hearts burn while he was with us? And he talked to us on the road and he opened up the scriptures and they rose that same hour. They returned to Jerusalem. They ran 7 miles back to Jerusalem. They found the other disciples and those who were with them gathered together and they said, the Lord has risen indeed and appeared to Simon. And they told of what happened on the road and how he was made known to them in the breaking of the bread. They kept waiting to see Jesus overthrow Rome, lead some insurrection, lead some revolution, raise up a militia of Jewish people who were ready to fight to the death and go toe-to-toe with Rome. In fact, one of Jesus' disciples named Simon the Zealot, not Simon Peter, but Simon the Zealot. The Zealots were an insurrectionist group known for violent acts against Rome. Jesus calls Simon the Zealot to be a disciple. You know, people were like, yes, it's starting. We got the Zealots. They were waiting on force. They were waiting on military might. They were waiting on physical violence and an overthrow of an earthly kingdom. They kept looking for these things and looking for these things and looking for these things. And all the while looking for the Messiah according to their conditions and their framework of faith, they completely missed the Messiah when he's standing right next to them on the road. The last verse here says, he was made known to them in the breaking of the bread. They were waiting on a conquering king, and he reminded them of a broken body. And that's when they knew. Hear me. We will never truly see Jesus if we're only looking through the lens of our conditions. If you have a conditional faith and you've placed your trust in Jesus, but it has all these strings attached, like, Jesus, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to trust in you, but man, you got to answer these prayers. Like, you've got to make my life work out like this. You've got to bless my future. You've got to get me into the college I want to get into. You got to give me the job that I want. You got to help me move and live where I want to move. And if you do those things, I'll keep trusting in you. We will never truly see Jesus if we're only looking through the lens of our conditions. We will be blind to him even when he's right next to us. Jesus, man, I'm going through some stuff. I've believed in you. I've trusted in you. I thought it was supposed to work out differently. I thought you were going to answer these prayers. I thought you were going to do this for me, man. When I got into this thing, I thought it was going to be like this, and you haven't come through. We will never truly see Jesus if we're looking only through the lens of our conditions. Jesus, man, I got someone in my family going through something right now, and I need you to come through. Like, I'm praying, and I'm praying, and I'm praying. Man, I believed in you, and I loved you, man. If you're real, if you're really real, you will answer this prayer. Like, you will heal them, man. This is my family. I need them. Jesus, come on. It's not a bad prayer, but it's conditional. I'll believe in you only if you do this. We'll never truly see Jesus if we're only looking through the lens of our conditions. Man, Jesus, I really like this girl so much. Would you answer my prayer and bring us together, and then I'll know. You'll never truly see Jesus if we're looking through the lens of our conditions. When we come to Jesus, we have to allow him to define himself. We don't get to define him. We don't get to put the strings on it. We don't get to put him in a box. We don't get to tell him how he should operate or what he should do. We can pray and we can ask for things, but we don't put conditions around our belief. We believe in Jesus for who he is, who he says he is, and who he says he will always be. Conditions blind us to the true king. We'll be awaiting some conquering king and waiting on the revolution, and Jesus is sitting in a home at a table, very meek and mild, breaking bread. That's Messiah. Oh, you guys are waiting on me to overthrow the Caesar and Rome? Yeah, I'm going to break bread. You guys are waiting on me to stir up a revolution and entice the people against Caesar? Yeah, I'm going to break bread. Conditional faith will blind us. You might have conditional faith and you may not even realize it. And so I'm going to pray for you guys. I'm going to pray for you guys tonight. And while we're praying, I would invite you into a dangerous prayer. A very simple prayer, but it's dangerous. And it goes something like this. Jesus, if I have put conditions upon my faith, would you reveal them to me so that I can repent of them? Very simple prayer. But if you have the courage to pray it, I invite you to pray it. Jesus, if I have put conditions upon my faith, please reveal them to me so that I can repent of them. Father, thank you so much for this room. Thank you for this room full of students. Thank you for your son and for him being who he is, that he's not going to cater to our definition and our assumptions and our conditions. Jesus, you are God. You are King of all kings. You are Lord of all lords. You are good. You are loving. You are perfect. You don't have to tuck into my box or anyone else's box to be good and loving and perfect. You are you, and we worship you. Jesus, we do pray for our own hearts, which can so easily be deceived, and these little deceptions and conditional things sneak in so easily, and I pray that you would reveal those to us so that we can repent of them and that our faith would be entirely based in you and who you say you are and not who we're creating you to be in our own minds. Jesus, we ask these things in your name. Amen.